Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/plainlabel. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
You know, I couldn't believe it when the bartender told me who you are.
Yeah, my Captain Pike.
Your father's son.
Can I get another one?
For my dissertation, I was assigned the USS Kelvin. Something I admired about your dad. He didn't believe in no-win scenarios.
Sure learned his lesson.
Well, it depends on how you define winning. You're here, aren't you?
Thanks.
You know, that instinct to leap without looking, that was his nature, too. And in my opinion, some Starfleet's lost.
Why are you talking to me, man?
Because I looked up your file while you were drooling on the floor. Your aptitude tests are off the charts, so what is it? You like being the only genius-level repeat offender in the Midwest?
Maybe I love it.
Look, so your dad dies, you can settle for a less than ordinary life. Or do you feel like you were meant for something better? Something special. Enlist in Starfleet.
Enlist? You guys must be way down in your recruiting quota for the month.
Now, if you're half the man your father was, Jim, Starfleet could use you. You can be an officer in 4 years. You can have your own ship in 8. You understand what the Federation is, don't you? It's important. It's a peacekeeping and humanitarian armada.
We done?
I'm done. Riverside Shipyard. Shuttle for new recruits leaves tomorrow, 0800. Your father was captain of a starship for 12 minutes.
He saved 800 lives, including your mother's and yours.
I dare you to do better.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are talking the 2009 film Star Trek, written by Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman, and directed by J.J. Abrams. Here to discuss the film with me is a man. He's a man that you know, and he's a man that you love. He is one of the guys behind 11 O'Clock Comics, as well as Marvel Noise. He is the one and only Mr. David A. Price.
Hello, everybody.
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there, including the show Filmographies, which I co-host along with Cameron Rice. And currently, as of recording, we are looking at the filmography of Ang Lee. And so we're dissecting the different films of that director. And so far, it's been pretty good. And we haven't quite got to by the time everyone hears this, we will have released that episode. But we haven't quite got to Life of Pi and some of his more recent work. But I'm looking forward to diving into that one. So before getting into the Star Trek reboot film, it's time for a quick segment that I ripped directly from David's show, 11 O'Clock Comics. It is drink roll call time. So, David, what adult beverage do you have for me?
My adult beverage of the evening is a screwdriver. I have a little bit of Minute Maid and what was left over of the generic, no label, bottom shelf vodka I had in the cabinet.
All right. The old mystery vodka.
It is. It is. It could be. Yeah. It really is. It could be my wife's plant water for all I know.
I am, in honor of Mr. Wine-loving Price, I'm going with a wine. It is from the brand is La Granja 360, and it is a product of Spain. It says proudly on the label. And it is a blend, and it is a blend of Gamacha and Syrah.
Oh.
And so it's interesting. And on the back here, it says La Granja is there to entertain and bring happiness to all the people. A different wine, a 360-degree turnaround for different people. So I don't know what kind of sense that makes.
Guess you got to be in Spain.
Yeah, I guess. Like, maybe it's sort of lost in translation a little bit there, but... But it's okay. Like, it's not one of my favorites. One that I've been drinking quite a bit that I would recommend to you if you haven't tried is Dave Matthews puts out a wine, and it is the Dreaming Tree, and he puts out a red blend, And you can get that at like a Target and, you know, like a grocery store for around $9-$10 or so usually.
No kidding.
And it's pretty good. Like, I was surprised because I was like, Dave Matthews, what the hell is he doing making a wine? But yeah, it's good. They make a Cabernet as well as a red blend in the reds, and then he makes a Chardonnay in the whites. But yeah, it's pretty darn tasty.
I will have to look for that.
Yeah, you'll have to look for it. So with that, let's go ahead and kick off our discussion of Star Trek.
I couldn't believe it when the bartender told me who you are.
Why are you talking to me, man?
Your father was captain of a starship for 12 minutes. He saved 800 lives. Including yours. I dare you to do better. Enlist in Starfleet.
You will experience fear. Fear in the face of certain death.
Pull your chute!
We received a distress call.
I've been waiting for this day my whole life. This day of reckoning.
We've got no captain and no first officer to replace.
Yeah, we do.
You are capable of deciding your own destiny. The question is, which path will you choose?
James T. Kirk was a great man, but that was another life.
They're locking torpedoes. Emergency evasive!
Fire everything!
So, David, looking up the plot for this, not surprisingly, it is very detailed when you look at some of the IMDb plot synopsis.
Yes.
Instead, I'm gonna read the sort of the little tagline from IMDb instead, because I don't want to read all that other stuff. So the plot synopsis, according to the header at IMDb, is: the brash James T. Kirk tries to live up to his father's legacy with Mr. Spock keeping him in check as a vengeful time-traveling Romulan creates black holes to destroy the Federation one planet at a time. And I guess when you boil it down, that's really what it's about.
I would agree with that, and I'm glad that with just a couple of sentences, it is kind of the essence, but it doesn't give anything away, because as I'm listening to you, I'm kind of shaking my head and you know, there's so much more you could elaborate on, but that is basically, yeah, you know, it's Spock keeping Kirk in check and there are reasons why and Nero is a time traveling Romulan. So it really, he goes from one planet on his way to another. Right. In the movie. So that's pretty much perfect.
Yeah, it's not too bad, which is surprising because IMDb, as this show has shown, is notorious for awful, awful. some of them we highlight just because they are just horrible. And so we'll read them and then laugh at them. So I guess before getting into the show, what's your history with Star Trek? Well, this is actually the second Star Trek film that we've done on Podshots. I was joined by Mr. Sean Pryor, and we talked about Star Trek First Contact.
Oh.
Probably around, like maybe 5-6 months ago or so. And so that was a good one, and he had kind of an interesting history with the franchise. But what's yours?
Mine is pretty much in order. For whatever reason, my father liked Star Trek, and so I would watch the reruns, and it for a show that was only around for 3 years, for three seasons, there seemed to be a lot of episodes. There was always an episode I hadn't seen before. And it was a big part. Well, maybe not a big part. Maybe MASH might have been a little bigger because that's something my father will watch. It doesn't matter. It could be on five times during the day on different stations and he will watch. He'll TiVo every episode just so he can still watch it. But Star Trek was, it was something that he and I shared. And then I didn't see every movie in the theater. I did see Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Unfortunately, I think I also saw five.
Don't say it.
Yeah, I believe I did. I don't know if I cut school in the afternoon with some friends to see it, but I remember seeing that in the theater. And I also saw six, The Undiscovered Country. I don't think I saw any others until, unfortunately, Insurrection in the theaters again. Uh-huh. But I would watch The Next Generation every Saturday night on Channel 11 because that was our local affiliate that syndicated the show. I loved Deep Space Nine. That is probably my favorite of the television series. Yes. And I, because of where I lived, I didn't, and because of what I was doing for a living, I couldn't afford cable. So, I was stuck with watching the local broadcast channels, and unfortunately UPN was one of the few stations that came in clear. So when I was home and just needed something on in the background, that usually meant Voyager was on.
You were rocking that Voyager.
Oh God. I saw way more episodes than I ever wanted to. I don't think I've seen one whole episode of Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
And I was giddy when I heard about this reboot, and I didn't know if we were getting a retelling or really how Abrams and company were going to work this. I think it was masterful. I love what they did with the franchise. And so, yeah, so long story short, it's been a big part of my life for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, that's pretty similar to my experiences. I am just a little bit younger than you. I was born in the late 70s. And so I missed out on the reruns of Star Trek, really. And I guess my first introduction to it was maybe season two of Next Gen. Because I don't think it was the first season. And that was a sort of bonding show with my mother instead of my dad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so her and I watched that, and we caught, you know, all the episodes the first season episodes when they came back on. And, you know, I watched some of the regular original Star Trek, you know, to get caught up and all that kind of thing. And I think the first one I went to the theater to see was six.
Okay.
That's
I like that because it ties into your Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I saw that, and then I went and saw the rest of them in the theater, even Nemesis. And I was really excited for Nemesis because I saw, you know, now, you know, he's Bane and he was in Warrior, but it was Tom Hardy as the clone of Jean-Luc Picard, and that trailer was really well put together, I thought, and I was all excited for it. And then I was like, oh wow, this is not great. you know, I watched Deep Space Nine, and I was, of course, Next Gen was the one that I really fell in love with first. And so at first I was like, I don't know Deep Space Nine, but once they kind of really started going serialized and really started getting episodes bleeding into each other, and once Avery Brooks had the bald hair and had the bald head and the goatee, yeah, is when it started getting good to me. But that's when it really sort of grabbed me, and it actually started being serious and taking a serious look at this franchise, and I really enjoyed that. And Voyager, I don't know, Voyager I don't particularly care for. It's I don't like. I could go on and on about why I don't like it, but I like what it tried to do. I just don't think it executed it very well, I guess.
I'd agree with that.
And then Enterprise, I maybe made it through about 15 episodes, I'd say. And I didn't care for that at all. Like, that's my least favorite by a long stretch.
Okay.
But yeah, so when this came out, I tried to stay pretty calm about movies anymore. Like, you know, there's all these movies that I want to see for this year, and you know, being an English major and wanting to, and hopefully going to grad school here to be an English teacher, I'm very, very excited about the new Gatsby movie that's coming out soon.
Okay.
And so that for me is like my big thing that I'm nerding out about. You know, it's not The Man of Steel, it's not Star Trek Into Darkness, it's Gatsby. And so I try to temper my expectations on the more franchise films, because it's like, well, I sort of know what I'm going to get, is what I thought. And when I saw the 09 Star Trek trailer, I was like, holy shit, like, this is going to be great. And I kind of let my expectations run wild a little bit. And then when I went and saw it in the theater, I was happily, like, all the expectations were met, and I loved it. And I actually haven't visited it as much as I have some other films, but I don't know if it's a case of I saw it and enjoyed it so much I didn't want to revisit it and realize that I didn't actually like it as much as I thought. But I remember loving it. And I guess getting into the actual film, the first note that I kind of have written down here is I absolutely loved the design of this, because it kept that traditional look, but also updates the franchise to make it look, you know, not as, I guess, for lack of a better word, hokey. And specifically, I loved the Narada, Nero's ship.
Yeah.
And the design of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because it was so aggressive and masculine looking, I guess. Like, it was like, you know, it's not like a cube.
Right.
To where it wasn't something that was just kind of real generic. It was something that is memorable.
It looked menacing too.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
It's.
And you don't, I mean, at the time, you don't know that it's a mining ship. You know, especially in that first scene with George Kirk, that little ship that he's on gets the shit kicked out of it.
Yep.
And so you're like, holy hell. And that's one of the things that I really appreciated was that, you know, for all the great things that Star Trek as a franchise has, it doesn't really get real sophisticated with battles until towards the end of Deep Space Nine. And this was some like high-paced science fiction, like real battling stuff with this opening scene, just the way that it was shot. Like, it's not two models and then they turn them and they're head on, you know, like in the next gen episodes. And, it was, you know, the camera's in there moving around and you got things blown up all over the place. And I just kind of liked that it was taking a different spin on the franchise, I guess.
Yeah.
So I really liked that. What did you think about the sort of keeping some of the traditional look, but updating some of that? Because I know that some people like that and some people don't really care for it.
I didn't have a problem with it. The uniforms were fine. The way the ships were, it felt like it was a natural progression between the Kelvin. Mm-hmm. And that bridge, and then the bridge we see of Pike's Enterprise 20 some odd years later, because it reminded me of when you would see the yesterday's Enterprise and the Next Generation, when Enterprise D meets Enterprise C. C's bridge is very dark, is set up differently. So it worked for me. Seeing the beginning of this Star Trek movie just made sense, because you can't have your biggest and your brightest and your best at the beginning if you're showing the past, because you have to get from there to the present, to what you're trying to show for the bulk of the movie. So it looked like it worked. Even though the Kelvin is a smaller ship than the Enterprise, seeing how the bridge was laid out and even the design of the bridge, inside and outside of the ship, and the officers. It worked for me. It didn't bother me that we weren't that these weren't necessarily throwaway old uniforms from the original series. I mean, there was. I made a note, which we can discuss when we get to the end of the movie about uniforms. But I thought it was I liked it. I liked it. You know, right off the bat, we're not retelling your father's Star Trek. Mm-hmm. We're doing something new because we're rebooting it. It's we want a new audience and new younger people are going to watch this. So we need to freshen it up a little bit.
Right. And what I guess sticking with the beginning, what I really loved about that was, you know, it seems like in most action films, they're using that James Bond sort of formula, you know, where you open up and you're opening with an action scene.
Right.
And then you set everything up. And so I don't know, like I didn't really know what to expect. And that's what I loved about the film was I was really excited about it, but I wasn't spoiled in any way, you know, and that's the same with this new movie. Like I saw the trailer during the Super Bowl and I haven't watched anything else. Like I don't want to know a lot about it.
Okay.
And so I'll see some trailers and if I see them, it's not like I'm going to freak out about it or anything like that. But I just kind of, you know, I don't need to know all the spoilers and I don't need to know what everyone's doing and who all the people are and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things that was a real bright spot for me was the whole George Kirk character, and that, you know, he was played by an unknown at the time,
yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, and, you know, who, of course, who ends up being Thor. And I remember seeing this, and you know, it's not a spoiler because it's in the first couple of minutes of the movie, but when he dies, I'm like, holy shit, like it was getting, like I was getting emotional watching the very beginning of a Star Trek movie, and I would have not expected that. And it was the, you know, the combination of the score, which, you know, he brings his collaborator from Lost, J.J. Abrams does, Michael Giacchino, I think is who it is, and he brings him along, and Chris Hemsworth, he just, you know, specifically when he's clean cut in this, he looks like Chris Pine, sort of. He looks like the kind of all-American, you know, this is the guy we're supposed to follow kind of character. And he dies and it's touching. And, you know, you have quite possibly the quickest birth in history with Jennifer Morrison, having James Kirk. But yeah, I mean, that really got to me. And I remember in the theater, like, my wife and I both being like, holy shit. Like they're not fucking around. Like, like they're taking this as serious as possible. And it was kind of like a slap to the face. And I really sort of appreciated that.
Cause I didn't remember while this was happening, until we find out later in the movie when Kirk asks about whether or not he knew his father. Right off the bat, for anybody paying attention to Star Trek lore, especially the original series, Kirk's father is alive when Kirk becomes captain. And here, right off the bat, right in the first 8 minutes of the movie, we're already turning things around.
Right, and that's what I love about it, because it does pay homage to the old episodes. And it gives you enough to where it's like, look, we know what we're doing. We know that we're changing it. And it's okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Settle down. It's okay that we're changing it. You know, so that I do like that as well. And, you know, they do go into explaining why. And I don't really quite like that as much. I just kind of wish it was, look, it's different. Just, it's different. Deal with it. You know, because they get into it a little bit with the red matter, but we can get into that in a minute. But I guess before getting into real deep into the plot of the film, I want to talk about the cast, because that in a movie like this, in a reboot, you know, we're going through it probably pretty soon with the continuation of the Star Wars franchise. And once they start announcing casting for that, you know, that everything's going to get picked apart. And so I feel like the same sort of thing happened with this. And, you know, that you have this unknown and a couple of unknowns getting humongous roles, you know, because I'd never heard of Chris Pine before he landed the Kirk role.
Okay.
I didn't know Zoe Saldana, who has quite a large role as Uhura.
Yep.
You know, of course, I knew some of them. Like, I knew Anton Yelchin and John Cho, and I knew of Carl Urban, even though he looks much different in most of his roles.
Yeah.
You know, because I knew him from Lord of the Rings, not necessarily just playing a straight up. And I guess I probably knew him from the Bourne third one, whatever, Supremacy.
Second one.
Yep. Okay. And then, of course, Eric Bana and Leonard Nimoy and Zachary Quinto. That was in the middle of the Heroes when it was good, right?
Right.
And one of the things that I think is interesting is this was kind of a little bit of an attempt of a rebirth for Winona Ryder, because she's in this, and supposedly most of her scenes were cut, and she actually had a bigger role to begin with. But she's briefly in this as Spock's human mother,
yep.
And then the next year she was in Black Swan.
Right.
And I loved that movie. And so I watched those two films fairly close together, and I was like, oh, Winona, like, you're playing a middle-aged woman,
right.
Like, but you don't really have anything to do in any of these films. So that's kind of too bad, because I grew up, you know, in the 80s with Winona Ryder films.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's too bad that you're not getting roles, but that's what you get when you steal shit.
Yeah, right.
But what did you think of the cast, I guess? Like, what did you... Did you think any of the people didn't live up to?
As I was watching it again this weekend, getting ready for this, once this came out, now all of a sudden, oh, who should be Hal Jordan? Oh, Chris Pine. Oh, who should be? You know, and everybody, all of a sudden, Chris Pine became the new Ryan Reynolds or Chris Evans. So it just. I knew Chris Pine because I saw him. There was and I'm blanking on the name right now, but he did a movie where it was an indie movie. It is a true story about a California vineyard, and I thought he was great in that. He played the son of the owner, and he did a great job in that. It was kind of like when people didn't know how to react to Michael Keaton, who was going to be Batman, and and if you saw the paper or Clean and Sober, and you knew he could do, you know, he wasn't just Johnny Dangerously and The Night Shift. So I had no problem with Chris Pine. I didn't watch Heroes, but I thought, just from the photos I saw on the set, I thought Zachary looked like a great Spock. Cho was from Harold and Kumar and the American Pie movie, so there really wasn't much as far as, you know, when you look back at Sulu's career on the original show, it kind of made sense that somebody who you're not really familiar with, they're sure that he can pull off this role, would be good for Sulu, and he worked. I was a little concerned about Simon Pegg, who is funny as hell. I've seen most of his work. I think he's great in the roles he's been in. And when I think about Montgomery Scott, I think James Doohan did a great job on the original series. He was a lot more serious, from what I remember, except for the Tribble episode, on TV. As the movies were coming out, and his relationship with Uhura, or walking through the Romulan ship and getting hit in the head, or as he's walking down the hall, there was more, and even his appearance on The Next Generation with Geordi, there was more comedy later in Scotty's life than the earlier days.
Well, yeah, because when he's in that original episode, or in the original series, like, he's kind of like a bodyguard type.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's all ready to mix it up.
He is. He's got that Irish blood in him, and he'll throw down with anybody. You think he was partly Klingon. You had Zoe Saldana, we saw in Guess Who. I was familiar with her work, and I didn't know what to expect with Uhura, but I'm glad she had a much more fleshed out role. And I thought that her relationship with Spock was just that was different. I thought that was fantastic. I really, really liked that addition to the story. Chekhov, Yelton looks familiar to me, but I can't really remember what I've seen him in or what stands out that I've seen him in.
Yeah, he was in Charlie Bartlett. He was the main guy in that. He was also in Terminator Salvation. He was in the new Fright Night. He's kind of a guy that was in he's been in a lot of things.
Okay.
But I think Star Trek was the first real mainstream. Because he was Kyle Reese in Terminator Salvation came out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so he's very much putting on a voice for this. I mean,
that's cool. He's like Walter Cumming. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And Carl Urban, I thought he was great in the Bourne Supremacy. I thought he was great in the Lord of the Rings. He was also in Doom.
He was also in Doom.
He probably doesn't want really that on his resume either. But there are things where I didn't. You expect him to walk around ready to fight, and to see him with the kind of the DeFrost Kelly haircut and sitting down next to Kirk, and you hear the voice. I could close my eyes and he does. Out of everybody there, I think he is the most, I don't want to say mimic, but he really is trying to emulate Bones McCoy from the original series. Everybody else is kind of doing their role, but Urban, I think, is trying to be Leonard McCoy from the show.
Now, do you ever remember in the original series explaining why Kirk calls him Bones?
I don't think it was in the series. In other things I've read over the years, and whether they were the novels or the comics, Bones, from what I am just accustomed to, Bones comes from Sawbones.
Oh, okay, yeah, and see, that's kind of what I had thought it was too, not from. She took everything but my bones.
Oh, right. And that's and it just, yeah, I don't know if they ever actually said why on the show. But I mean, back then in the late 60s, early 70s, they're really not going to, I guess, go into little details like that back then. Sure. Or maybe it was even in Who's Who in the Star Trek universe that DC put out years ago, and that's where I saw it.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
But yeah, no, maybe. I always associate it with Sawbones. And here, as I was watching the scene where she's telling McCoy to sit down on the shuttle, and he says Bones, that's really the only time he says it. But yet at that point on, Kirk keeps calling him Bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess one of the things that, I really like, I thought, Chris Pine was tremendous. I mean, he gets a lot of the attention because he's playing Kirk, but I like the fact that he is believably cocky, but also believably charming at the same time. Mm-hmm. He is the sort of guy where I liken it to, my sports analogy or reference is the guy that you love if he's on your team, but you hate him if he's not.
I like that.
To where he's kind of like that guy, to where he's a prick because he's just kind of says it, he just tells his mind, and when they're doing the test and he screws around with it to make it not be the actual test, and that kind of thing. And it's something to where if you're on side, you're like, oh, he's what a rascal, but if you're not on his side, you're like, that son of a bitch.
Yeah, dick.
So I really like that. I think that I saw that trailer with the young Kirk and the sabotage and him jumping out so many times.
Yeah.
And even though I saw that so many times, like it still works for me very well. And I feel like that's kind of the way I feel about most of the film, is even if I saw something and knew it was happening, it didn't matter because I was swept up into the film and I was along for the ride. You see what I'm saying?
I'd agree with that. It's sometimes kids can annoy me a little bit, depending on the kind of roles they play. Or it's kind of the Simpsons thing. I kind of grew out of watching the Simpsons every week because I'm so tired of kids being smarter than the grownups. And I see this kid who is, you know, driving this Stingray vet down the Iowa highways and into the off the road, and he just, you know, he narrowly escapes death, and he's all cocky when he climbs out, and the cop officer asks him, you know, what's his name, and it took me a second to just be okay with the idea that this kid is going to grow up to be the guy who I'm going to root for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you, I mean, I don't know, that scene just started every trailer off, whether, no matter how many changes there are, A, B, C, or D, whatever trailers they came out with, that scene in the car was, that's what you always saw. And it's not a scene I'll fast forward through now if I'm watching the movie again, but it is part of the movie, and it's fine because as you watch that, the next scene is seeing Spock in school, and you know, it really is the parallels that Kirk and Spock we see at the beginning of the movie before we get to Starfleet, whether it's the birth and that ties somewhat in to Spock because of why Nero was there, and then as a preteen, and then the same thing with Spock and how he can get angry. It worked. I really, really enjoyed that. I really do hope in the second movie that maybe it's written in Chris Pine's contract that not everybody gets to beat the shit out of him. The man was on his back and trying to block body shots throughout every scene he was in.
Yeah, that's interesting because he's the hero of the piece, but he looks very unflattering.
Oh my God, he is. Yeah, he's. It's whether when we're at the shipyard where we meet, you know, Ensign Cupcake for the first time, and then there's with Island or whatever Nero calls his first mate, but it doesn't matter. Even with Spock on it, it's just every time you see him, he's going to get beat up.
Well, and also when he is when Bones is trying to get him on the ship.
Oh yeah, you know,
he's going through all the different
with Numbtongue. Yeah,
yeah, and he's doing the, and that's what I think is funny because, you know, I had mentioned earlier that the film is taking itself very seriously. You know, they're making a very serious reboot and a very serious effort, but it's not afraid to go very slapstick at times.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that is just J.J. Abrams or the writers or a combination of the two having a very nice handle on what is too much like a Christopher Nolan heavy, dark film and what is too much slapstick. And I think that he has a really nice handle on that because, you know, even though Simon Pegg is a well-thought-of comedic actor, like he is very broad in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's very slapstick. And you could say the same thing about Chekhov and his very put upon accent. And he's, you know, I won't try an impersonation, but that's the thing that if, you know, if I was doing my Chris Niesman and my old man get off my yard kind of thing, I would be like, oh, this is stupid, you know. But it's like the film's not afraid to have fun with itself.
Right.
You know, and that's what I like is that, like I said, it can do things like having Rachel Nichols as the green woman that Kirk is sleeping with.
Yep.
You know, and it can have little silly throwbacks like that. But then at the same time, it can do something like what you had mentioned earlier, the Spock and Uhura relationship that I had no clue was going to happen and was very surprised by. And it's sort of one of the things that I go back to more the more I think about this film. And I think it's really interesting, and I really like the concept of it. And I wonder sort of, like for me, it's more interesting in the Uhura sort of angle than it is for why Spock is after her. It's more like, why is she after this sort of emotionally distant man And it kind of speaks more to who her character is, I feel like. Because, you know, he is always going to be cut off and he's always going to be mostly emotionless and distant. And I think that that says a lot about her as to, you know, at this moment in her life, this is what she needs. She doesn't want somebody that is a comforting sort of person. She wants this sort of cold, cut off thing that, for me, it read as like a father issue to me. Because you hear about this, like the traditionally abandoned child who, you know, has like daddy issues or whatever, goes after someone like that, that's, you know, removed. And that's kind of what it struck me as. And so this, I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with the plot of the film, but it's like, that's kind of the thing that I like, where it's a little touch like that in a genre film, in a franchise film that I can, you know, spin off and run and think about other things that may or may not have anything to do with what the actual intent was. And so I think that's interesting. My next note that I have on here is you had already brought this up, but I like the real soft touch that the actors have as well with the sort of homage to the previous characters and then the sort of lack of impersonations of the previous characters.
Right.
You know, and because like you said, all of them are sort of doing their previous incarnations, but they're not really doing an impersonation so much.
And you're still going to have Spock's eyebrow.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to have Sulu with the fencing and you know, a young Chekhov who, you know, in this first movie, we've already, I think they've already shown that Chekhov is much smarter than we ever saw him in any TV show or movie. You know, his Spock comes in and says his telemetry is correct and I can verify it. And I, you know, he runs through the ship so he can lock on a falling Kirk and Sulu and rescue them. And these are things that maybe the old Chekhov would have done had they given him the chance, but we never witnessed that. And here we're getting a more proactive Chekhov, which I agree with. And so there really wasn't, I guess, a lot to try to flesh out with that character. So I could see Yelton making this Chekhov his own. But everybody else, yes, they are their own characters, but they still have to – they're still trying to ground themselves, I guess, in the – original versions, because this was supposed to be the same timeline.
Right.
So we were supposed to get something similar to what we're familiar with, to what came before, but naturally now they can kind of stray a little bit off that.
Yeah, it's like this is the basis in which you're working on, and you can go a little bit different because it's a little different story, but it still needs to be recognizable.
Yes.
And I guess the last thing I really want to say about the cast is possibly one of my favorite performances is Bruce Greenwood as Pike.
Love that.
And I love the, like, it was the trailers, and I'm thinking about this now and I'm getting goosebumps talking about it, but it was the trailers where Bruce Greenwood is speaking and he said your father was a captain for 12 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, you try to do
and
better.
He goes, you try to do better. Yeah. And it's that. And I'm like, holy shit, am I on board with this?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just his character as being this sort of, you know, we have a lot of characters that are either they're learning while they go or they feel like they are. And this is the sort of parental figure to sort of shepherd all these younger people, and to where he just feels fatherly and feels like everything's going to be okay as long as he's around.
Right.
And he's actually not in the film for very long, but it's like you feel safe with him. And then when Kirk takes over, you're like, well, who knows what he's going to do?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's crazy. Like, he doesn't think things through sometimes. And so I really like that. And I really like the whole, I guess I don't really like the interrogation stuff because it felt very much like Star Trek II.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Although they didn't have a close up of a really phony looking ear, which I would have liked to see. but what can you do? So that's kind of what I wanted to say about the cast. And then I guess getting into, you have all of the getting the band together, for lack of a better term, type stuff, where they all end up on the Enterprise, and all that's fine, and it's all, you know, interesting and that sort of thing. And you have, like you said, Kirk getting his ass kicked, and then we get to the real plot of the film, which is Eric Bana trying to make Spock pay for destroying his world.
Yep.
And then we get into kind of the like the timeline stuff and the Leonard Nimoy appearance, which my wife loves. She loved seeing Leonard Nimoy in this film, and she saw him in there. She watched this with me when we rewatched it for this discussion, and she goes, "Oh, he's so cute." She's like, "I like it." She's like, "He's so old and frail and cute looking." That kind of stuff. Like, I like that he was in there because it made sense, you know, that he was that was from the different, the real universe, quote unquote. And he was, kind of there to explain to Kirk what he needed to do and that everything would be okay and blah, blah, blah. And it's, you know, in the time travel movies, I kind of feel like the less it's explained, the better.
Right.
Because I'll go for it. Just don't make me think about it. You know, like, just say time travel is a thing where you go through this black hole and you're in a different time. Okay. Like, that's all I need. I don't need to know that that's the red matter, this, and, you know, I don't need Spock explaining what's going on. So I didn't really care for some of that. And it's actually that whole build-up, because they throw Kirk on that Antarctica-looking planet.
Yep.
That looks a lot like the Star Trek VI planet. And then they have the not very entertaining action stuff, where he's just running from a creature and then he's running from a different creature. Yeah. And I'm like, what? Like, okay. Like, this is, that felt like a studio note to me. Like we're 20 minutes in. We need another action beat. We need another creature. We need another special effect. To where it's like, well, doesn't it? He's just running away from things. Like what is this bringing to anything? Like, there's no character development. There's no, oh, because he's Kirk, he was able to get away. It's like, no, he just got lucky and this thing ate the other thing and he fell down and Spock was in there. So that was the only thing I didn't really care for, was that whole stuff. What did you make of the whole timeline explanation and all that kind of thing?
I think the explanation was needed, because we started off with the Kelvin being attacked, and so getting that explained was helpful. And mm-hmm. I thought Spock showing up was, he's been in pretty much every, although he wasn't in Deep Space Nine, he wasn't in Next Generation, and he, Picard had to tell him that Sarek had died, and I have no problem with Spock being the bridge between the old and the new, from ours to theirs. And it was passing of the torch somewhat. You couldn't have Kirk. You couldn't really have anybody else. And it made sense to use Spock, because he's old enough where he'd still be alive. There's the connection between the Vulcans and the Romulans. Mm-hmm. We got to see the mind meld in action. I guess it was, if I dissect it, yeah, it was convenient that of all the planets to abandon Kirk for this not quite treasonous act, but you banish Kirk down to a planet and there's a Starfleet outpost 14 kilometers away. You can start walking, or you should stay there until someone comes to rescue you. But so he pops out of the pod and he ends up getting to Spock. So yeah, that was convenient, but from that point forward, between Spock telling Kirk what he needs to do, and plus we also have this was kind of a nice little nod to Star Trek IV, because you have Spock telling Scotty about transwarp teleportation and how you can do this, and this is, you haven't discovered it yet because you haven't invented it yet, and mm-hmm. he gives Scotty the formula, and basically that's how Scotty comes across it. Whereas in Star Trek IV, Scotty tells a manufacturer, basically gives him the formula for plastics, and McCoy was kind of getting on Scotty, but Scotty said, well, how do you know this isn't how he comes up with this invention?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I really have no problem with it. Was because there are times where, yes, things are a little convenient in the Star Trek universe. So that's okay. We had to get there. I guess I'll say we had to get there somehow. And
right.
And mm-hmm. the scope of the movie, this worked for me.
Yeah, I think the main thing is that it explains how the two universes are different, but they're both equally valid.
Right.
And that was fine for me. Like, it isn't something like it came off as not brushing away. You know, it's like a lot about the comics when everything's rebooted or something's changed. It's like, right. those old comics are still there.
Yep.
Those old TV shows you still watched are still there.
That's exactly what, when the movie came out and people were talking about it, it was, you know, we would describe it as it doesn't negate what came before. Everything still exists. It doesn't insult your intelligence either. It's letting you know what you know still happened. But because there was a change in the future, it's not like they're going between seasons 2 and 3 and making mm-hmm. these changes. They are making these changes based on the later years in our Spock's life, after the Next Generation, after everything else that we've already witnessed. This is something that happened years from now in Spock's world, in Spock's universe. He caused this to happen, and because of how black holes work, now we have an alternate reality. We have a new timeline, and now we can go from here. It doesn't mean what you're familiar with, your 3 seasons, your 6 movies, they haven't gone away. Those right. still happen because we still live that because Spock is still alive.
Mm-hmm. But it is an alternative life, or it's an alternative universe, but there are no goatees. So that's disappointing.
Yeah, well, it's not an evil universe.
Right. Yeah, so I like that. One of the other things that I wanted to mention is I wanted to talk real briefly about J.J. Abrams as a director in this film. He gets a lot of shit for the whole Steven Spielberg lens flare, like he's a disciple of Spielberg and all that kind of stuff. I don't give a shit about any of that because, you know, it's he's a director. I like most of his movies. I liked Mission Impossible 3 that he did. I like this film. We are in the middle of recording a very, 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 very long episode on the discussion of all 6 seasons of Lost
wow.
that he was a part of. And so I don't mind the lens flare and that kind of thing. I do think it's interesting that he loves the shit out of some Dutch angles. He loves that tilted angle.
Yeah.
And I do like that in a film like this, he allows the camera to move around. He doesn't, like I said earlier about the battles, he doesn't just prop it there and have the two models move towards each other and apart and that kind of thing. And I really appreciate that, specifically in the corridors, which are, you know, for some reason, nothing is near anything else. Because especially when Chekhov is running to do that teleportation, he's like running forever to get to the transporter room.
You're right.
And I'm like, what a pain in the ass. Like, why not just transport him there? And then, you know, but whatever. I mean, that's nitpicking. But yeah, so I think that that's kind of interesting that he brings a different sort of visual style to the film. And one of the things that I like, and it goes along with the sort of set design and that kind of thing, that everything is very, very white on the Enterprise. Like, it's very almost clear.
Right.
And instead of looking sterile, which it could come off as, you know, looking you know, Spock is like this sterile character, this very upright sort of personality. It just comes off as looking clean and looking new and looking futuristic, for lack of a better term, I guess. And I really like that. Like, it doesn't have to look like the Enterprise C. It doesn't have to look like they've been through all this shit, because this is a brand new ship.
And yeah, Pike makes a note to say, you know, it's our new flagship, and let's try to bring her back with no dents, no scratches, and you know, and this is her maiden voyage. So mm-hmm. we're establishing that not only are the original seven going to finally come to be on this ship, and when you mentioned Pike, out of everybody in the movie, or especially on that bridge, was he the oldest person on that bridge?
Yeah,
because you mentioned it with the father figure, but I mean, I don't remember the original Pike in the episode and a half we got to see him in. I don't remember. Oh crap, it was Jeffrey. Was that his first name or his last name? But I don't remember that Pike. That Pike was mostly the same age as Kirk back then.
Right.
That was because he was going to be Captain Pike, and his wife talked him out of doing the silly show.
Right. Then they recast. Yeah.
So, but you know,
Jeffrey Hunter was
that's it. Okay. So right. Sorry. So Jeffrey was his first name. So he went to go do the King of Kings movie, and that was pretty much it. So, here we get the older Pike, which I like, once he says, this is our first voyage, that at that point, yeah, the Enterprise didn't feel sterile. It didn't feel cold. It felt new. I remember when my car was new. It looked that way. And there were no, I mean, it's not coming back to San Francisco into that shipyard in that great shape, but it when it left, and thank God the parking brake was on, because if they had showed up with every other ship in the fleet, they would not have fared any better than anybody else. So everything, again, even though as far as things go with it being convenient, everything kind of happens for a reason, because if Sulu didn't make that silly mistake, then
Chekhov, wasn't it Chekhov?
No, Sulu didn't have the park. Sulu kept the parking brake on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And once that was set and they were able to take it to warp. So again, if we didn't, that all works. Yeah. It's funny. Haha. We can laugh at Sulu because, you know, he made a mistake, but thank God he did. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have much of a movie at that point, but no, I really liked the look of this Enterprise, because it looked like the old one I'm used to, kind of without that satellite dish in the front, but it's mm-hmm. still, it was almost like a blanket. It was comfortable. I felt good in this wrapper.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to talk about the movie in general, because it's familiar enough to where you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But then it does do some different things and you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
That's
and
cool.
It's,
I can dig it.
Yeah, it's not just like, you know, for example, in the books and movies show that we're just getting through with by the time this airs, we are talking about Watchmen and Sin City.
Okay.
To where it's not like that, to where it's, here is exactly what you want, right? This is what you want, right? This is the original source material. We're just putting it on screen. This is what you wanted. You know, it's not like that, like it is in Sin City, yeah. Where there's no
shot.
Artistic license.
Right, yeah. No, it's enough there where, like you said, you're familiar with it. We're tweaking it a little bit. And you know, and again, if you don't like what we're doing, there's still hours and hours worth of stuff you can rewatch because you're used to that.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So I guess one of the things that we haven't really talked too much about is what did you feel about Eric Bana and that whole side of things? Because, you know, we were talking about how clean and sterile everything is. And of course, his ship is a mining ship. It is very dirty. It is very dark. It is very dangerous.
Massive.
It's, yeah, it is humongous.
You right as you're saying that, and in my notes, I'm getting to the little section I wrote for Romulan technology. Mm-hmm. Everything about the Romulans, or at least the last of the Romulans, everything's aggressive, especially mm-hmm. their technology. They when they're asking, when they ask Pike, when Pike takes the shuttle to the ship, and they ask him, does this ship look familiar to you? Or, you know, do you know about the whereabouts of Ambassador Spock? And when they want to show him, they're throwing the image to him. So it's just, instead of a drag and drop, they're like, they're chucking it in his direction so it can show up on the view screen. And when they have to, when the hailing frequencies are open and they're trying to communicate with the other ships, in order for the screen to show up, they're, you know, I'm used to swiping on my phone, but they're like swiping aggressively, and it's
right.
just very, it's not offensive, but they seem to be an angry people.
Well, it comes off to me like, I understand the sort of revenge factor, which is why they're pissed,
yep,
right?
Absolutely.
But it came off very much like, we're going to use Romulans, but we're going to give them more of a Klingon personality.
Right, yeah.
Is what it felt like.
And there are times where, in the original series, the Romulans and Klingons looked...
They looked...
But yeah, I mean, the original Klingons, when they first showed up, they did not have the crab on the forehead and
got the little Fu Manchu and
a little bit of makeup, but yes, there were. I don't think there were no Klingons in the first movie, were there? In 2.0.
No.
So okay, and that doesn't mean that they won't eventually show up. But yes, as far as that aggressiveness, yeah, that was unlike other Romulans I'm used to. But yeah, I didn't think of them filling in for the Klingons. It was just, for me, it was mostly Nero really, really being upset and not, well, I don't want to say he wasn't thinking things through. He witnessed this and he sees Spock trying to get away. So he's going to put two and two together, never mind whatever the reasons are, but it really is just for him, it's all about just exacting revenge. So that's really the only thing I viewed it as.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think you can kind of interpret or think a little bit more about, even though it's not on screen very much, is they do mention that Eric Bana and crew have been looking for Spock for a long time. Yeah.
Because he came across first and he was waiting for Spock. So what was 25 years for Nero and his crew was barely minutes for Spock.
Right. And so you think about having this revenge on your mind for 25 years.
Yeah. And thank God that ship is as massive as it is, because I'm guessing that there are ways to farm and irrigate. And, right. I mean, there's just got to be. I don't know what you'd be eating for 25 years, but there has to be something that on your ship that will let you farm your food.
They've got a really aggressive farmer
that
in
must
the back
be,
somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere, yeah. Just tilling the soil.
He's just slamming seed down into the ground.
Breathe again.
Or maybe they've got those 3D printers and they're just printing up some food.
Okay, yeah, the early replicators.
That's right. Well, this is an indeterminate amount of years in the future from Star Trek 2.0, so they could have had replicators, I guess.
Yes, well, see, and that's the other thing. Because Nero is from the future, that was one thing that I definitely remembered, and that was when Kirk and Spock were going to beam aboard Nero's ship. Scotty says, if that ship has any design sense whatsoever, I'm going to transport you. You will end up beaming into the cargo bay with no one around.
Uh-huh.
So obviously that doesn't happen. And I'm wondering if it's just, and it doesn't, I didn't take that to think that Scotty is just not good at what he thinks he knows. I took that to mean that either because the ship is from the future, because when you have, even when Scotty showed up on the Next Generation and he's asking LaForge about the warp core and how do you propel, and you know, he's talking about dilithium crystals and things like that. So obviously designs, technology, things change mm-hmm. over the years. And if Nero's ship is from not just obviously 25 years ago, but 100 or so years ago in the future, then yeah, then Scotty's a little off, because the way a Romulan will design a ship might be a little different than the way a human will, but also because of the way technology changes, what you might consider to be a good place to put thrusters in the future may not so much. It's like if I look at a VW Beetle and from back in the 60s and 70s, the engine's where? It's in the back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there have been advancements, there have been changes, and for Scotty to say, I'm going to end up beaming you into the transport and into the cargo bay because, you know, that's where I would design, that's the way I would design a ship. Things are going to be a little different when you're not only from the future, but when you're a different race altogether. So there are definitely, changes. And I mean, and that's where things get, I guess, as I'm talking about it, things are a little confusing because this Star Trek is in the past from where we're used to with Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager, but Nero and Spock are from the future mm-hmm. and they're going back. And it just, if you just sit and watch the movie, you're going to have a grand old time. You're going to be very entertained. But if you try to dissect it based on what you know, then you may end up a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, it's the trying to figure out where Nero fits in and the future Spock and how far in the future it really is.
Yeah.
I think it's smart by him not saying, oh, well, I am blank, blank years old.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so because then you would have all the internet nerds going, well, he can't really be that old. He's, you know,
as in this issue and in this novel and in Peter yeah. David wrote, it's like, okay, all right.
You know, I have a lot of the Star Trek novels at one point, and I think the only ones I kept were the Peter David ones.
Nice.
I really enjoy all the Q stuff that Peter David wrote.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's apropos or nothing. But so I guess we're getting sort of towards the end of the film. What did you want to say about the costuming and that sort of thing that you had alluded to?
The only time there were the uniforms of the crew are very reminiscent to the original series, and you know. The gold, the blue, the red, and with
no green sparkly one for Kirk though.
But even though Kirk would occasionally show up on the bridge in a different tunic, pretty much Chris Pine did also because he was wearing the black undershirt for most of his.
Yeah.
So even then he was still a little different than everybody else. But I liked a little bit of the fish scale kind of look to these tunics. I like that we see an undershirt for the most part, whereas back then, you just thought that just they were wearing the one tunic.
Now the worst has to be out of the design for me, the season 1, season 2 Next Generation ones.
You didn't like the whole One Piece?
When
you said you started watching on the second season, I was going to ask you if you saw them wear the sweaters and if Riker had the beard or if they were still wearing the onesies, because once the first officers wore the sweaters, depending on where you fit, what your rank you were, you still wore the one piece. Cause a lot of LaForge's people, a lot of Worf security people, they didn't get to wear the sweaters.
Yeah. It was the thing that was ridiculous was like that off the collarbone first and second season outfit. That is the worst. Because it's like so much neck you can see. And you're just like, oh, come on. Yeah, but it was definitely Riker in not the full beard, because season 2, like, it's a little thin.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, that's maybe the worst of the seasons for me, too. And that's when I started. 3, 4, 5 are great, but 2,
the only time I really saw anything that I could consider an homage to the earlier Star Wars is when Tyler Perry tells Kirk to go relieve Admiral Pike, and Pike is sitting in the wheelchair, and it looks like he's wearing, if not the whole uniform, at least the tunic part of the Star Trek The Motion Picture outfit.
Oh, yes, the motionless picture.
Well, the three-hour dry dock scene picture. that's because I like that. I mean, I don't know if that was because he was, air quotes, injured and in his wheelchair, or if that's an admiral's outfit, if that's an admiral's uniform. But I don't know if I'd like to see this group in the 2, 3, and 4 uniforms. Although I do love that kind of
more shoulder pad looking.
But, yeah, with the where you can kind of unbutton that over your heart and it flaps down. And I don't know if this crew would look good in that. I don't know if I'm ready to see them in anything other than these outfits, because I'm not ready to cover up Uhura's legs. there are just, I mean, and they can go in a completely different direction. I'd love to see something different, or you can just keep, I mean, see, and I'm trying to remember if I've seen much in the trailer as far as
I think it's pretty close to the original.
Okay, that's fine.
Now, I don't know who Benedict Cumberbatch is, so I don't know exactly what his character is even, but I thought I saw him in the trailer, but I don't really recall.
Trailer. The only time, I don't know who he's supposed to be either. I do know that some people were either wishing or assuming or just crossing their fingers that maybe he was going to be Khan, but that was before the trailers were released.
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to be Khan.
I don't either.
And so I feel like I'm going to get it spoiled, but I would like to just not know.
Oh, same here. I saw the most recent trailer, and that was enough for me. There was enough of, I had to watch it because I had to show my wife the Cumberbatch scenes, because we are huge
Sherlock
fan of Sherlock. And,
yes.
And so, you know, it she kind of threw me a dirty look, because is this why we're not getting Sherlock till next year? So, you know, I don't know if we're going to see a movie in the theaters this year, and if we don't tend to go to the theater too often. I think the last time we went last year to see Amazing Spider-Man, because she wanted to treat me to that, and a friend of mine, a coworker, gave me a gift card to a theater, so we went to go see The Dark Knight. But we saw the first Iron Man movie, so I don't know if we're going to see Iron Man 3 in the theater, but I would really like to see the next Star Trek movie in the theater.
I would skip Iron Man 3, David.
I'm not going to. I may not see it in the theater. I'm not going to skip it.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, is in the theater.
If we can only see one movie this year, and it's also really not my say, if because Robert Downey Jr. is in it, I may have to acquiesce, but we'll see. That's even if we do decide to go to the movies, but I would like to see the Star Trek movie on the big screen. So
I said this earlier to I think it was Ryan Ottley that was talking about The Great Gatsby. That is my most anticipated film of the year, is the remake of Great Gatsby.
That's cool.
Like I said earlier, I was an English major, like I'm big into that sort of thing. I'm really looking forward to that. I am interested in a sort of morbid way about Man of Steel. I hope it's good. Like, I really hope it's good. And I think it'll look great, of course, because it's Zack Snyder. I just hope there's no raping. I think I can just kind of cross my fingers. I don't know how optimistic that is. But Iron Man 3, I don't know. Like, I like Robert Downey Jr., but I think that all of his lines just say improv. You know, like, I don't know that he has much script anymore. So I don't know, like, you know, and I just saw the Wolverine trailer, and so that looks better than I thought it had any right to.
I guess there's absolutely no bread in Japan, because nobody looks like they've had any food that sticks to their ribs over there. Nobody
gets, now wait a minute, now
gravy, just, I mean,
You were just talking about Zoe Saldana.
Yes, I know, and because I mean, there are the few scenes where she's hugging Spock both in the turbo lift and on the pad before the Enterprise when Kirk is trying to figure out her first name. That is, I'm looking at her neck and I'm like, that just goes on for days. And yes, she was very skinny in The Losers, and and they tried to show her in as little clothing as possible, and she was extremely skinny there too. Yes, I wouldn't mind her eating something, but considering the main cast are six other men, you got to, you know, grab onto what you got. And even though there's not much to grab on with her, she is the only female on the cast.
What I would say is I wish that the sort of Hollywood model, I guess, or like the ideal would be more like what Rachel Nichols looks like, who plays the Green Woman.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I like that. And then if you've ever seen have you ever seen the movie The Descent? It's a horror movie, David.
I heard of it, but no, I have not. I remember.
Okay. It is tremendous. Like, it's very, very scary.
Okay.
But it's not for everyone. But in that film, there is a young woman named Natalie Mendoza, and she was born, I believe, in Hong Kong, but she looks like she should have been cast in one of like the G.I. Joe films or something, because she's like has a very, very athletic build, but she still looks like feminine.
Right.
And she looks like she could beat some ass. And in this horror movie, that's what she does. You know, she is beating the shit out of some things, but yeah, she's one that I've been on this show raving about how I wish she was in more things. And apparently no one in casting apparently listens to this show because she's not getting cast for much.
Bastards.
Yeah, sons of bitches. This is the only movie podcast, right?
I mean, that's it. That's the only one I listen to.
Okay, good. So getting back to the film, I guess we could talk about the end. What did you make of the end, I guess?
I absolutely love the shot of the Enterprise popping up and Saturn is behind it. I'm planning on doing a screen cap of that one of these days, but the ending felt to me like some of the, it felt like the Wrath of Khan. It felt like the Undiscovered Country, where it was good guys versus bad guys, where our crew, where the Enterprise, you know, They even extended the olive branch. You know, Kirk says, "We'll beam you folks over," and Nero's like, "I'd rather die a slow and agonizing death." And all right, that's no problem. And they have no problem doing that. And that felt like the Kirk I know. Even though I don't think our Spock, that Leonard Nimoy, would ever turn to Kirk and say, "I'm really not cool with, you know, you saving this dude's life since he kind of killed my mom." I don't think our Spock would do that. I had no problem with 2.0 Spock doing that. But Kirk very much felt like Kirk, where you know, I'm going to go to buy the book, and so be it. That's the way you want. And they let them all have it. And then there was the – as it's happening, and I'm watching it again, it suckered me in like I saw it the first time. You're going to blow this ship up. The red matter is going to turn this into a black hole. The Enterprise is way too close. Uh-huh. You are going to get sucked in. And I was still on the edge wanting to see how they're going to get out of it. And, of course, eject the core. And that's what did it. And but as far as Kirk doing his own thing and going to intercept Nero ship and not joining the rest of the fleet, and it we would have had so few headaches had they just listened to Kirk to begin with, because he even said it's a lightning storm. You said, Pike, in your dissertation, you saw the lightning storm when the Kelvin was attacked. Uhura was listening in. Oh, that was it. They referenced Klingons. We just did not see them.
Right.
Uhura was listening to a transmission. The Klingons mentioned a lightning storm. So Kirk is explaining, we're going into a trap. And again, it's really as much crap that was thrown at him with fists, with knees, and as much beating up as Kirk went through, he still ended up saving the day because it was all, this is all he wanted from the beginning. He just, you know, we need to, we're going to stop Nero. And they did. And I enjoyed the ending. Nothing, I didn't shrug or throw my hands up in the air screaming, oh, come on, or that, you know, it worked. I, you know, from when they end up back on the bridge when McCoy says we have no first officer, we're screwed. Mm-hmm. And Kirk goes to sit in the chair and Sulu says Pike made him first officer and Bones is like, oh, that's great. And Kirk tells him thanks for the vote of confidence. And I mean, and those little barbs back and forth, that's what I love to hear. And that to me, that's Star Trek, seeing the Holy Trinity go at it. And when you have from that point on and Chekhov says, we'll show up next to Saturn, the magnetics from the rings will be invisible to Nero's ship. I was on board. There was nothing I love the design of Spock's ship and that little spinning tail and flirting around like it's a goddamn hummingbird. I love that. And then he destroys the drill and he ends up back and Pike says, you know, what are you doing here? And Kirk says, well, I'm just following your orders. Cause you think back and Pike even said, well, you just have to come back for me. And it all worked. It felt like a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the things I love so much about the characterization of Kirk is he is very much a character that relies on guile. Like, he's not maybe the smartest. He's definitely not he's not going to beat everyone in a fight.
Right.
You know, he's not, but he knows what it takes to win the war. Like, he doesn't win every battle, but he'll win the war.
Yeah.
Kind of a character. And that's what I like. And that's what I think is important, why they put all those fights in there where he's getting beat up and yet he's losing these little things, but it's pushing him towards what he needs to be.
Right.
And, you know, then we have the end where it's, you know, sacrificing the core, which is kind of a Star Trek trope anymore, but, and that's fine. And I think everything just worked so well. And I think you summed it up perfectly by just saying it felt like a Star Trek movie and a Star Trek ending.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, it just felt like that blanket was wrapped around you and you're like, everything is going to be all right. Like, don't worry about it.
I'm along for the ride. I mean, you know, they're going to, I mean, it would have been, they probably would have been outraged had one of the seven actually gotten killed during the last scene, and then, you know, you try to figure out who's the next one that's going to die as the series goes on. But
I couldn't even imagine.
It worked. It really did. People went home happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, if they are, I don't remember if it was a 2 or a 3-picture deal that these actors had signed on to, but if they do something where it's like a Star Trek 3 Spock death, you know, to where they do that, not necessarily with him, but with one of the characters, like, I will be shocked and I will be, as long as it's executed as well as this film, I will be probably tearing up because, you know, these characters I've known for years just on my own, and these interpretations I enjoyed so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why I don't necessarily revisit it, because it's not like the movie doesn't not do anything new, but it's at the same time, it's like, I know what that's about. Like, it's good. When I want to see it again, I'll put it in. I bought the Blu-ray right when it came out, all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I liked was this felt like a, like every superhero movie that has the origin, to where the first movie is really the heavy lifting, right, because it's all of the origins.
Right.
And then the second film is where you can
hit
go
the ground
crazy.
Running. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, you can have fun
on that.
And you can, do all that. I feel like those earlier films up through maybe First Contact, probably the second one through First Contact, because 5 didn't exist. And through those, I have maybe like a greater nostalgia for them because I've seen them so many times and I grew up with them and all that. But this, you know, technically is probably just as good, if not better, in terms of the filmmaking involved. But yeah, this is, it definitely fits right in. It definitely keeps the tradition of good, bad going.
Because
Nemesis was poop. And so I just hope that they break the streak next time. So
yeah, this time it'll be the even numbers that are the good ones.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. No, it's even though obviously it was a Kirk movie, everybody pretty much had a time to shine. Like we didn't really get a lot of Uhura and Scotty and Chekhov in the old movies. Here we got Sulu with the funny, with the fighting. We got Chekhov showing he's smart. We got plenty of Uhura. We've got Scotty. I mean, it's as the movies progress, I hope we just continue with that fleshing out. I hope it really isn't just a spotlight on one or two characters.
Right. I would like to see a little bit more Carl Urban because he was in the film plenty, but he didn't really have a lot.
Tell me something I don't know when he's promoted to chief medical officer. There's just right. That's really, he shows up on the bridge and he says a line or two, but we did not see him in action the way except to vaccinate Kirk, but we don't see him in action as much as we see everybody else.
Yeah, so I feel like from what the trailers are showing to where he's going to have plenty of opportunity to fix up some injured people in the second film in the franchise, because it looks like there's a lot of shit going on.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much looking forward to the second one then?
I really am, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, me too. I'm really looking forward to it. So I guess kind of wrapping this up, is there anything that we didn't mention or missed or anything else that you wanted to bring up?
The only thing, let's see, going over my notes, the only thing I didn't mention was thrusters on full. And other than that, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So this is one that I really enjoy. It's, it's one where I don't feel, like, I feel comfortable where the Star Trek franchise is, even though this will be Abrams' last film and then he'll move on to the Star Wars franchise. It'll be interesting to see a movie that is Star Trek based written by Damon Lindelof, because this is reuniting the J.J. Abrams, Damon Lindelof, Lost collaboration, Damon Lindelof was a executive producer, I believe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so this one, this is his script, and he does have another movie coming out. I believe it's Tomorrowland, but this will be the first film that he will have written after Prometheus, which was a very divisive film, which we did a Podshots on when it came out. And I think the consensus was that we thought it was interesting if it wasn't 100% successful.
Okay. Yeah, I still need to see it.
Yeah, it's fun, like, and it looks great. I mean, it's beautiful to look at, but there are some things that don't really make a lot of sense. And now there's this whole, like, let's shit on Damon Lindelof sort of thing on the social media about how he's the reason why there's not Prometheus 2 in the works already. And then he has come out and done interviews saying, look, I'm not involved at all. Like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
but so it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with, because I feel like he is a guy that has great ideas, but doesn't necessarily know how to fill in the middle in the end. So it's a little bit like J. Michael Straczynski for me.
Yeah.
To where, you know, it's a good idea, but you still have to execute. You know, you still have to go through with it all. You can't just be an idea guy. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So I guess wrapping this one up, David, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show under the handle @plainlabelpod over at Twitter. And you can also follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79. We also have a Facebook page for the show. You can like that. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. You could also friend me over there if you wanted to. Just like our regular show, we're going to have some Amazon links on our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. If you click on the link and buy Star Trek, we do get a little bit of that money, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So again, we would like to hear what you think, so please write us an iTunes review and tell other people about the show. Before closing this one out, I would like to thank David for coming on and talking about Star Trek with me. If people wanted to hear more from you, where would they find you on the internet?
They can find me at 11 o'clock comics. Vince usually has it up early Thursday morning. That's weekly. Marvel Noise, which is pretty much every other week, or at least I try to be on it almost every other week. There you can find me on Twitter at David A. Price. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me at marvelnoise.com or 11o'clockcomics.com will get you to the EOC forum, and daprice.com is my personal website.
Well, there you go. So thank you once again, David, and thank you for listening, and I'll be back with another Podshots episode in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.